Coming up on Blind Abilities.
The best thing is when there's synergy between the software and the hardware, and they both work in concert to provide accessibility. So that's what I mean by an inclusive learning evangelist.
A teacher of teachers.
The teacher has a very special role when it comes to accessibility, in the sense that you get to touch thousands of people that come through your classroom. Your impact is exponential.
A pioneer in accessibility.
It's been quite a ride, and I hope to continue to do it as long as I can.
Blind Abilities presents A Chat with Luis Perez. Now let's join Jeff Thompson and Pete Lane with their special guest, Luis Perez.
When we share
what we see through each other's eyes,
we can then begin to bridge the gap
between the limited expectations and the realities
of blind abilities.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Pete Lane, along with Jeff Thompson. Welcome to another Blind Abilities presentation. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Pete.
With us today is Luis Perez. Luis Perez is an educator, a presenter, an author, and consultant for inclusive technology with a passion for assistive technology and universal design. In addition to his other talents, Luis is a photographer, and he also has a YouTube channel with which I am very familiar, as I checked it out several years ago when I purchased my first iDevice, the iPad 2. And frankly, I don't think I would have made it through those early hurdles of learning voiceover and dealing with the anxieties and the fear of touchscreen technology without Luis's instructional videos.
In this tutorial, I'm going to focus on my five favorite features of voiceover for iOS 5.
Good morning, Luis, and welcome to the Blind Abilities presentation.
Good morning, and thank you for that kind welcome. I'm glad to be here on the podcast, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. I'm glad that you found my videos helpful, and that's the reason why I created them, because I know the kind of frustration that you speak of as a person who was diagnosed with a visual disability later in life. I had to go through some of the same things when I first started using technology. So my goal is to try to make that process easier for the next generation that's coming along.
Excellent. Well, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you on board. Luis, you did mention that you have a visual impairment. As we talked earlier, our audience is primarily visually impaired and blind individuals. I would say predominantly voiceover users, but we have some low vision individuals as well who might use the Zoom. But talk a little bit more about your visual impairment and how it got you into the current field where you are now.
Sure. I have a condition called retinitis pigmentosa that some of your listeners may be familiar with. And I was diagnosed with RP, which is what we often call it for short, as an adult. You know, it's a genetic condition. So I've had it my whole life. It's just that it became more pronounced as I went into my 30s. And so basically, I had grown up my whole life as a sighted person, kind of getting by. I mean, I knew all along that there were some issues with my vision. I had great difficulty learning how to drive, for example. And I had great difficulty with sports because I chose to play baseball in high school and gave that a shot. But, you know, it was difficult going with very limited vision. And so as an adult, I finally was diagnosed with RP as a result of a number of car accidents. And, you know, that was a difficult time in my life, to say the least, because, you know, you have to kind of change your identity all of a sudden and kind of make some changes in your life in terms of employment and things like that, primarily because I couldn't drive anymore. And so that was a big challenge of trying to maintain my independence without being able to drive. And I think, like, what really got me through that period was this discovering technology and what it could allow me to do. And I tell people that I had a magical moment when I one day I walked into the computer lab at my university. I had gone back to school at that point, and I heard Alex for the first time on a Mac.
Hello, my name is Alex, and I am the latest text-to-speech voice available on your Mac. It's nice to meet you.
You know, it wasn't so much the quality of the voice, even though that was important because it caught my attention. I had heard screen readers before, but the quality of the voice got my attention. But it was more than that. Like, it spoke to my heart in a way, and my soul, in the sense that it gave me the reassurance that things are going to be okay. Because there were really smart people out there working on creating this technology and making it easier to use and more effective. And so it really just that idea of hope that it gave me just allowed me to kind of continue forward. And from there, I finished my master's in instructional technology and then a doctorate in special education. And that's what I do today. I'm a consultant focusing on universal design for learning, assistive technology, and primarily helping teachers to understand the potential of this technology and how they can use it to empower all their learners. But I have a soft spot specifically for students with visual impairments because we're underrepresented in the academy, not just at the undergraduate level, but at the graduate level as well, especially in subjects like science and math. And so whatever I can do to kind of increase our representation in those fields, in those areas, that's what I do.
Before we move on, how would you characterize your vision as we speak? Have you lost most of it to the RP? Are you primarily now a voiceover screen reader user, or do you still have some residual vision?
I still have some remaining vision. I'm classified as legally blind. I would say I have about 10 degrees of vision, central vision left. Uh-huh. I use a lot of the low vision tools, things like Zoom, Invert Colors, Text-to-Speech, but I do spend quite a bit of time with voiceover because one of the things I discovered early on when I was getting my doctorate is you have to do a lot of reading for a doctorate and a lot of research.
Of course.
And my eyes would get tired very quickly. So listening to the information instead of struggling to always, you know, look at it on the screen was really helpful to me.
What you're talking about earlier, describing your accomplishments and your work that you do, you title yourself as an inclusive learning evangelist. I thought that was neat.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I kind of got the idea from Guy Kawasaki. If listeners are not familiar with Guy Kawasaki, he used to be Apple software evangelist back in the day. And his job was basically promoting the Mac to developers so that they would create apps for the Mac. So this is a while back, you know, not recent history. But I like the idea of being an evangelist and working with the general public to promote assistive technology, but also working with developers, because I think that's the next area that we need to focus on. Companies like Apple, Google, Microsoft, they've put in some really neat technology into their devices. But the limitation is often when developers don't code their apps or their software to work with those assistive technologies. And I'm sure our listeners are familiar with that. When you go into an app, right? And you hear button, 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 but it doesn't describe what that button does. So I try to work with developers that are specifically in the education space and try to be proactive in the sense of, like, let's not just point out what's wrong, but point out what they do right as well. And how we can further that along so that the best thing is when there's synergy between the software and the hardware, and they both work in concert to provide accessibility. So that's what I mean by an inclusive learning evangelist, promoting right. That idea of universal design.
Spreading the word.
Absolutely.
Where does Tech Ease for All fit in?
Tech Ease for All, that's an old project that I worked on at the University of South Florida. It was a grant-funded project at our university to promote assistive technology and accessibility within our faculty and our student body. And one of the things that I tried to do with that was to model accessibility, because within education, the more we can model things, so it's not enough to just talk about it, but actually model it for people so they see that it actually can work. And so that was the idea behind that project, was to model accessibility by, you know, doing closed caption videos, an accessible WordPress site, including image descriptions, those kinds of things.
Teaching the teachers.
Exactly. Yeah. Because what I've always felt is the teacher has a very special role when it comes to accessibility, in the sense that you get to touch thousands of people that come through your classroom. You know, it all depends on what level you teach, whether it's K-12 or higher education. But your impact is exponential because the people you teach will then go forth and teach others often or just have influence out there in the world. And so that's why teacher preparation is my passion. I feel like my impact in that way is exponential.
Luis, as a matter of fact, you mentioned to me earlier that you were in Jacksonville recently, which is where I currently live, speaking to a group of educators. Can you tell us a little bit about what your topic was and how do you think that group received your message?
I think it was received pretty well. These were educators. They're part of a program in Florida to promote accessibility in the schools. So they have a number of regions throughout the state. So for the last month, I've been visiting with them in Miami and Jacksonville. And then just yesterday, I presented here, right in my backyard in Tampa. I'm in St. Pete, but it was the Tampa region. And so these are educators from area schools. A lot of them have other responsibilities. They might be therapists who work with students with disabilities and so on. I started by showing them some of the speech technologies, right, that are built into iOS. And then we also looked at some apps that they can use with students to allow them to access print. So a lot of students that have print disabilities, either because they're blind or they have a motor difficulty where they can't flip the pages, any of those types of impairments. I show them a number of apps they could use to help those students. And we try to make it fun. So we looked at apps for, you know, creating video and creating audio and the like. So it's as much about the accessibility as it is about creating accessible content as well.
Very nice. Luis, you are an avid proponent of universal design. I know that our audience is familiar with that term. We've all heard it. But help us better understand what is the concept of universal design and how does it impact us as blind and visually impaired individuals?
I have a saying, and I don't know where I found it, so it's hard to give credit to the person who originally coined it. But if I had to summarize universal design in one phrase, is that what is essential for some is almost always helpful for all. And so we see that with things like curb cuts. We see that with accessible entrances and the like, where these things were originally designed for people with disabilities and they now benefit everybody. And I see it in the technology sphere as well, because the way we use technology is changing and rapidly at times. So a lot of the technology that, you know, we as people with disabilities have known for some time, like, you know, speaking to your computer, that's not something that's new. We've been doing that for a couple of decades now, or listening to a computer, right? Again, not something that's new. But now those things are becoming more mainstream because we're using our phones or our other devices, and who knows what's coming next in different environments. So we want to use them on the go. We want to use them in environments where there's bright lighting. Anybody who's used a touchscreen in bright lighting knows that it's not always easy to see.
Right.
We may be using them in a loud environment where we might not be able to hear. So all of these technologies that were originally for people with disabilities, now we see people using them all the time. We see people talking to their phones now and listening to stuff because you may be in the car and all of a sudden you can't look at that screen. Right. So it's important to have a different interface.
Let me interject a thought here, Luis. Jeff and I were talking yesterday, as a matter of fact, about some feedback that he had provided to developers of a particular app. And we were talking exactly about that point, that if these apps and these developers realize that improvements in the area of accessibility will impact not just the disabled user, but the general user as well, that there's a lot of accessibility features which are certainly beneficial to the sighted user.
And I think that will impact everybody's ability to enjoy and benefit from technology. But I think ultimately it benefits us as well as people with disabilities, because I think there'll be greater buy-in into the development of these technologies. Whereas when they sort of remain as a specialized field, it's tougher to get funding, it's tougher to get resources allocated to them. But I think when they're seen as something that can benefit the whole population, I think it can make a difference in terms of the buy-in.
In one of the interviews that I listened to while researching your website, you referred to a cartoon. Do you remember that cartoon? And if so, can you describe it for our listeners?
Yes, that's a cartoon that we often use when talking about inclusive design and education. And it's basically the scene, to paint the scene, it's a snowy day.
It's in Minnesota. And...
Probably. But it's in, you know, we see a group of students in front of a school, and there is a ramp and a set of stairs. And we see there's somebody clearing up the stairs, and there's a kid with a disability who's in a wheelchair, and then there's another group of kids who are not. And he is basically asking, if I remember correctly, he's asking the person clearing the stairs, you know, when are you going to get to the ramp? And he says, basically, when I finish with the stairs, right? And the kid with a disability basically says, well, if you clear the ramp, we could all get through. And so that's that idea that, like, you know, again, that accessible feature in the environment, it's good for everybody. So the kid with a wheelchair can get through, but all the other kids too. We can sort of take that idea into technology as well.
It also sends the message that it's very apparent. You know, it's kind of it's right there in front of you. Why don't you see it?
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes some of the easiest solutions are often the best. They cost the least amount of money and are the easiest to implement, but sometimes we don't realize it.
And that goes to the point of when they're developing a piece of software, you know, if in the beginning they can start to build it, you know, did they build the stairs first or the ramp second, you know, that type of thing. We interviewed a gal, Cindy Bennett from Washington, who's going to college, and one of her emphases is trying to get accessibility built into the curriculum for developers in the college level.
It's the same thing with educators. The more we can do while people are in school and making it part of the curriculum, the better things are, because what happens generally with teachers is when they go out into the school, you're in survival mode. There's so many things coming at you, you know, in terms of different standards, different initiatives, that you're just focused on surviving those first few years in your career. And I anticipate that it's the same thing for developers. Once you go out into the workforce, different priorities take hold. And so it becomes a little bit more difficult to make this part of your professional life. Whereas if we put it into the curriculum, you know, by the time you come out, it's going to be something that's almost second nature to you. And in fact, you probably are going to start seeing it more prominently because you're going to have that awareness. It's almost like once you become aware of a concept like universal design, you can't like go around in the world, in the physical world, without seeing examples that are bad examples of, you know, universal design would make a difference here and there. So I think it's important to do it at the education level.
That's great.
Luis, you have the distinction to be an Apple ADE, Apple Distinguished Educator. Is that the acronym?
That is correct. Apple Distinguished Educator.
Tell us a little bit about how you accomplished that, how you achieved that, and what that means.
The ADE program that I'm very proud to be a part of is a leadership program that Apple has where they're looking for educators that are, you know, pushing the envelope with Apple technology, doing innovative things with that technology to promote education, transformation in education. And I originally became an ADE in 2009, and there's different components to the application, but one of them was a video that we had to create, sort of highlighting how we use the technology. And what I did, this was a while back when I became an ADE, but I created a test that could be presented to learners on the iPod Touch. So this is pre-iPhone, pre-iPad. I learned online that you could show text on the screen of the iPod Touch. And so we found a way to sort of deliver a test so that a learner with a disability, they could just plug in some headphones and they could see the message on the screen, but also hear it, you know, for each question of the test. And, you know, that's not like a big deal now, but back
not
then
now.
It was.
Yeah.
And what was important about that was the idea of inclusion of these were students who would be pulled out of the classroom and taken somewhere else to take the test. And to me, that's never been right. To me, like, you should be able to do what you want to do in the same environment as everybody else. And we can do that just by thinking creatively and looking at the barriers and looking at ways of removing them. So that was a, you know, a small thing, but for that student that is now included with their peers and is able to take that test just like everybody else, I think that's a big deal. That's one of the things that fuels my passion for inclusion, is the idea of giving people that freedom to do things that they weren't able to do before.
So you actually did this. When was this? Do you remember the year?
This was like in 2007, 2008.
Wow. When the iPod Touch, did it have a voiceover capacity at that point?
No, we were using audio files. Audio files could show, they could be synced with a short piece of text that was displayed on the screen. So this was way before voiceover.
So you were exploiting that short piece of text then?
Yes, exactly. It was a hack, definitely. But in the early days of any technology, that's often how it starts. It's with
that's
the
right.
Hack.
It shows that it can be done. Might not be the best way to get it done, but it shows that it's possible.
You say that it's not impressive today. I mean, cassette books on tape, that was impressive at one point too.
Yep. You got to start somewhere and build from there.
Does the ADE distinction give you any inroads with Apple? Do you have communication with Apple? Do they keep in touch with their ADE community?
Absolutely. And, you know, we have meetings once a year. We come together at an institute where it's basically a two-way communication. We share with Apple what we're doing in the field and bring back feedback about things we would like to see to improve their, you know, applications, their hardware, and so on. And at the same time, we get some professional development as to how to best use these tools in education. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship and one that I've been really happy to be part of for many years now.
Is the disabled community represented by folks other than you, or are you the only one with assistive technology credentials?
No, there's several people within the community. I have a good friend in Australia. His name is Greg Alchin, and he also has a visual impairment. And he and I have collaborated on a number of projects. I also have a friend in Spain, Daniela Rubio, and these are all people you can look up online. She is completely blind. And so her and I have collaborated on a number of podcast episodes and a number of projects. What's nice is that we're distributed throughout the world.
Right.
And we've actually done a conference presentation, a virtual presentation last year, where we shared experiences from each of our perspectives, from our countries as well. So it's a global community, and that's really nice. Sometimes things that we take for granted here in the U.S. are different in other countries, as I've learned from working with them. So we're all at different stages of sort of development in terms of technology, but also in terms of advocacy efforts. So it's good to work internationally and collaborate.
Luis, earlier you mentioned how when something's developed, such as a curb cut, that everybody starts to use them and takes them for granted. I've noticed, and I don't know, you probably have a better view of this, the swiping gestures, all the things that we use on the iPhone on basically the glass surface and all that stuff that we used for accessibility with voiceover and all that. I've noticed that so many apps are starting to come out with identical gestures. And I'm wondering if these are starting to collide at all.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful with that. One of the things that I've liked about voiceover over the years was sort of the simplicity of it. And that's another thing that made me a big time user of voiceover on my iOS devices is when I first started using a screen reader, I wouldn't mention which one, but let's just say that it had a lot of keyboard shortcuts. And to me, there's a lot of cognitive load with all those shortcuts. Especially if you're a student or you're trying to, not even just a student, but you're out in the workforce, you know, your goal should be to, in the case of a student, to master the content, or in the case of an employee, to master their job, not to spend all your time mastering keyboard shortcuts or whatever. So that's one of the things that I appreciated about VoiceOver is how simple it was to use. And so over the years, I think you're right. As apps kind of start to put in their own swiping gestures, there is the potential not only for conflicts, but to just add too much complexity, mm-hmm. too much stuff that you have to remember. And so then again, it becomes, before we had a lot of keyword shortcuts to remember, now we may have a lot of gestures to remember. So I think simplicity always is best in terms of the solution.
I remember when the first MP3 player, the Diamond Rio, came out, I snagged that as fast as I could, and I used to record from my yellow cassette player into that. And I used to spend 3 hours getting ready to do my homework. I mean, that much time. So when you mentioned that, how much time does it take them just to get to the point where they can start taking in the content? That's amazing how much time it took me.
Yeah, and that's time that you could have spent, you know, really processing that information instead of the mechanics. So ideally, we minimize the time that you spend in the mechanics, and that gives you more time to spend on the actual content or the actual task that you have to perform at your job. And so, again, that's what it's always attracted me to the Apple products. They're not perfect by any means. I always emphasize no technology is. You know, all technology is, in a way, and always in a constant state of development. But I found their simplicity, you know, with still quite a bit of power, but the simplicity in terms of being able to learn them fairly quickly, that to me is where the power is.
Mm-hmm. It's not unlike the WordPress platform. I notice your website on the WordPress platform. You don't have to become a web designer. You can input content and click a button and be done.
Absolutely. And it's made a publisher out of everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right. A blogger.
For better or worse, that means there's a lot of content out there and it's not always all good.
But that's true too.
At least we have the option, right?
Yeah.
I believe this is the best time in history to be blind, but to have any kind of disability. The accessibility features built into Apple's mobile devices provide us with a level of opportunity that has never before been seen in history. These accessibility features also allow us, as people with disabilities, to find our voice and our creative expression. I believe everyone has the right to be creative. I find my creativity through photography. Here are a few photos that I've made with my iPhone.
Madeira Beach in Florida. Aerial view of Salt Lake City, Utah. Panorama of Mexico City. Columns in front of Truman Hall at University of Missouri Columbia. Riverwalk in San Antonio with downtown buildings in the background. Face of alien toy hidden behind balloons. Sunset at Indian Rocks Beach, Florida. Self-portrait of my shadow showing my white cane.
I believe that you don't have to see to have a vision. My vision is a world where everyone can use technology to express their creativity.
You are an avid photographer, which is an odd undertaking as a blind or visually impaired individual. Help our audience understand how that's not quite as scary as it sounds for a blind person.
It's not, and I think I would encourage every listener who's listening to this podcast to give photography a shot. I think there's a lot to gain from, well, number one, from learning how to use the camera on your device, because it's not just about photography these days. The camera is a way of getting information into your device, and that can be through a number of scanning apps, you know, where you can scan content and bring it into your device so it can be spoken out loud. It can be from object recognition apps, you know, ones that recognize currency or recognize objects. It can be collaboration apps. You know, there's just so many things that you can do with a camera on a device that even just having basic knowledge of how to use it, I think will benefit you in that way. But I think photography is also about that idea of we should be able to do everything other people can do. We may need a few adjustments here and there and, you know, a few different ways of doing things. But if other people can, you know, take pictures of important moments in their lives, whether it's a birthday or the holidays that are coming up, why shouldn't we be able to do that? So my question with photography has always been, why not, right? And so, of course, I have to do it a little bit differently than other people, but, you know, why not? So as a person with a visual impairment, I just have to take a lot of photos because I don't know if I with my visual impairment, I don't know if I cut off things. I don't know if it's actually captured, right? So just by taking a lot of photos, I tell people bits are free in a way.
Yeah.
It's not like the old days where you had to take things to a lab and it would cost you a lot of money if you didn't take the right photo.
So iOS does give you audible directions in some instances, right? As far as your focus. I know it has facial, not recognition necessarily, but it says, you know, bright, clear face, or it kind of directs you to some extent. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, not only that. So for portraits, that works well. You know, it can give you the facial recognition. I generally don't shoot too many portraits or pictures of people. People are unpredictable. They like to move. I have a difficult, I know, right? Especially kids,
right?
Like little kids. And so I have a difficult time with motion because I have like pretty much no peripheral vision. Anything that moves quickly, I can't
get out of your field of vision, right?
Yeah. So I've made other types of photography my focus. Landscapes, things that, flowers, you know, things that don't move as quickly. And there, the facial recognition doesn't really help me. But what does help me is the ability to hear the menus and the options in the photography app. And that's an area where I've seen some improvement lately. It used to be that I was limited to the built-in camera app and possibly Instagram. Instagram has improved quite a bit in terms of accessibility for voiceover. But I am seeing other apps kind of incorporate voiceover in a better way. Things like Snapseed and Hipstamatic, to point out a couple. But we still have issues with those apps. You know, there are still places, very important places, where I get kind of stuck sometimes. So if you're a developer of either of those apps and you're listening, I hope you're listening, I commend you for taking the first steps, but hopefully we can continue to improve those apps. Because with photography, with all these photography apps, my question still is, why not?
Yeah, I say that to woodworking, which I do, but there's a lot of reasons why not for that sometimes.
Yeah, there's 10 fingers and that's
yeah,
10
yeah.
reasons why not.
Well, like when you're talking about the developers and the camera apps, like, you know, there's filters where you can do stuff that get, you know, their titles are just filter, filter, filter. You know, that doesn't right. help me out there.
Yeah. And then the filter should give you some information about how it makes the photo look, as opposed to some of the obscure names, you know, Amaro. Oh, that's great to somebody who can see it. But to someone who can't, it should give you sort of an indication of what it does to the photo that you're taking. Maybe a description of the kind of mood that it creates and so on. So it's a tough area to kind of bring accessibility to, but one that's not impossible to make more accessible.
So across the top edge of the screen, we have the following options from left to right.
Flash, off, HDR, button, camera chooser, back facing, button.
And then along the bottom edge, we have the following options again from left to right.
Photo and video viewer, button, take picture, button, filters.
I know you've done at least one or two demos on your YouTube channel. In fact, I watched one where you demonstrated the panorama view on the iOS camera.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I do, again, as a person with no peripheral vision, even when I'm not shooting a panorama, sometimes I'll use the panorama feature because it just gives me more to work with.
Puts it all into your center. Yeah.
Yeah, I can always crop it later, but if I have more of that photo capture, then I can work with it. And, you know, I don't just work with voiceover, although I know that's what's mostly of interest to the people who listen to this podcast, but I work with switch control quite a bit, with some of the other features on iOS devices, and then I do a lot of work with captioning.
Hey everybody, Luis Perez here with a tutorial focusing on my improved captioning workflow, which is made possible by the improved closed captioning support iBooks Author. So here I'm in my favorite captioning software, which is Movie Captioner from Synchromedia. I'm not going to go...
One of the things that I stress is that I think sometimes when we have a visual impairment or a hearing impairment, whatever kind of impairment it is, we get very focused on our own impairment, and we forget that there's a wider accessibility and disability community out there. We can do a lot more when we work together with other advocates who have other disabilities. Mm-hmm. That's my feeling. It's like, don't get so locked into your own idea of accessibility, but consider it as a broader thing that if we come together, we can enact more change in the world, I think.
Absolutely.
My first book, Mobile Learning for All, Supporting Accessibility with the iPad, is now available for order from Corwin Press. It focuses on empowering students of all levels of ability through the application of universal design for learning principles with the iPad. I hope you find the book and the resources I have compiled on this site helpful in your own work.
I enjoyed looking at I forget which one it was, something about the ebooks, where you're publishing an ebook.
Yeah, I published a few of those on the iBookstore, and I have actually one on photography, as a matter of fact, and the title is pretty interesting. It's called A Touch of Light, because A Touch of Light is about all I get, and, you know, photography is about putting a touch of light on the world.
It is.
Putting it on capturing somehow. So that's out there. It's a free ebook. So if you do a search for my name and A Touch of Light, it has a lot of information about different apps, different accessories, and techniques that I use to do my photography. I recently put out one on the Apple Watch, which I've been using quite a bit. So if you've used an iOS device, a lot of what you know already will work on the Apple Watch as well. So VoiceOver is built into it. Zoom is built into it. So if you're on the fence about the Apple Watch, maybe that will, you know, entice you to at least take a look at it.
I think a lot of our audience, I know myself and Jeff, because we've talked about it, have been reluctant, just wondering exactly what the watch could bring into our lives for that cost. It's a tough decision. Perhaps reading your book will tip us.
Well, and it just went down in price in some places by $100. For me, it's, a lot of it is the notifications. The fact that while I'm walking around and, you know, I use a white cane,
right,
and I usually have my phone, you know, in a bag or in my pocket. And now when I get text messages, which is what I use it a lot for, I can just take a quick look at the screen, quick tap, and then I can reply to those text messages. I haven't found apps to be as useful yet, because I think people are still thinking of it as like iPhone apps, rather than let's come up with something that's uniquely a watch app. But I think the notifications are helpful, and the directions where you can walk around and it taps you in ways to alert you when you have to turn. I think that's a useful feature.
A Day in the Life with Apple Watch and VoiceOver. Apple Watch and nightstand mode with alarm going off at 7:31 a.m. Get the weather for the day with dark sky.
74 degrees. Rain for the hour.
Review headlines with USA Today.
Navy destroyer sails near disputed Chinese islands.
Get walking directions to nearest Starbucks with maps.
You did a video on your channel, A Day in the Life with the Apple Watch, which is very interesting. Starting with the alarm in the morning and taking you through the day. Really creative approach.
That was good.
Yeah, and I try to describe it. I use Alex to describe what was happening. So hopefully your listeners can give me some pointers if that worked for them and the descriptions work. I'm always trying to make things as accessible as possible. It's, you know, not always successful at it, but just as I say to developers, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to try. You have to take the first step and then continue to improve over time.
Well, Luis, before we wrap it up here, are there any messages or pieces of information that you'd like to get out that we failed to touch on?
Basically, if anybody wants to stay in touch, I love to hear from the disability community, and I'd like to get some feedback on things you're interested in terms of videos or ebooks and so on, because that's what I do a lot of, is build content. I can be found on Twitter. I actually just changed my Twitter handle, so it's at IEYE on Access, AXS, so I on Access. But it's AXS. It used to be Luis Perez, underscore Luis F. Perez. Mm-hmm. But my name is just way too common in Latin America. It's like John Smith or Jane Doe. So right. I decided to make it something a little bit more catchy.
So that's I on access, and access is AXS.
Correct. Okay. And then also, if you're on Instagram, if you enjoy Instagram, I am on there as LFP1211. Those are a couple of ways that you can stay in touch.
And your YouTube channel is LFPerez72.
Correct. And then my website / blog, I've been posting a lot on Apple TV lately because of the accessibility support that's been added to it. So I'm at LuisPerezOnline.com.
And there's a wealth of information there.
Yep. So check it out. Let me know what you think.
Well, we have. It's chock full of great information.
Address, LuisPerezOnline.com, the website of Luis Perez. Welcome, banner. Luis posing with iPhone. Welcome to my website. I am an educator, author, presenter and inclusive learning consultant with a passion for accessibility and universal design. Top posts and pages. Fourth generation Apple TV accessibility overview. What's new in iOS 9 for accessibility? Zoom on fourth generation Apple TV video. Two new options for recording your iPad screen. Resources. Bullet. List start. Articles. Bullet. Ebooks. Bullet. Infographics. Bullet. Online courses. Bullet. Video tutorials. Bullet. Presentations / webinars. Bullet. App / resource lists.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Jeff, any other questions for Luis?
No, that just about does it. I'm sure as soon as we get done with this, I'll have five of them.
I'm sure I will too.
I got your WordPress. I got that logged in. I remember it said Luis, my voiceover came on. It says Luis Perez Online. I said, oh, he's on Skype already. But it was reading your title.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I was first checking out your videos, probably 5 years ago, again, brand new iPad, never had an iDevice before that. And YouTube would give you the title of your video and then posted by, and it kept saying Luf Perrin. I'm thinking, what is this name? Is this a French name? And I've had to learn how to use the rotor to scroll by character. And I finally realized it's Luis Perez.
So. Yeah, we're still working on that. It still can't pronounce my name correctly. Right.
Well, I remember a while back, I was listening to some stuff. I came across your stuff and I always thought, wow, I don't know who he's talking to. But I think I was actually tapping into where you're talking developer talk with developers and stuff, which at that point of time wasn't my, I didn't get it, you know, at that point. Now, as I'm sitting here thinking back, I'm thinking, wow, he's been involved in this stuff for years. You know, the stuff that we always thought about as we were struggling to trying to accomplish getting technology accessible and stuff. You were in the trenches there.
Yeah, it's been quite a ride, and I hope to continue to do it as long as I can. You know, even when I go to the Apple store to buy a device, I often end up educating right. some of the people there. So.
True. I'm sure you do.
It's a mission, right?
Well, Luis Perez, it's been a pleasure and an honor speaking with you, and we wish you all the best as you move forward in the world of inclusive learning and accessibility.
Thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you for this podcast, and thank you again, and happy holidays to everybody out there.
Well, once again, thanks everyone for listening, and have a great day. This concludes our Blind Abilities presentation. You can find us on the web at blindabilities.com, on Audioboom, on the Blind Abilities channel, and on Twitter at Blind Abilities. You can reach us by email at support@blindabilities.com. Special thanks to Andre Louis for his wonderful music. You can follow Andre on Twitter @FreakyFoof. Once again, thanks for listening and have a great day.